Boker Tov world, Baruch Hashem, a brand new week of exciting learning. And yesterday we left off on Daf Kuf Chof Alev Amud Beis at the bottom, and we were talking about the machlokas here of whether if you are machnis a full shear of these little strips of meat, which Rabbi Yehuda was talking about, and everybody was made of, that here the idea of alal, even though it might mean under certain locations, it might mean martika, which is very tough kinds of actually connective tissue and ligament, which is not really edible. But when it comes here to discussing Rabbi Yehuda's halacha, gathering pieces of alal together, over there, it actually means little pieces of meat that were cut off at the time that the skin was actually removed, was flayed. And those pieces of meat, Rabbi Yehuda tainted, if you bring them together, then it's actually considered to be a real shiur. So, remember that Ravuna said that that's only true where you put it all together. But if you didn't put it all together and it just happened by itself, or a child put it together, but there was no das that put it together, so then Rabbi Yehuda would be made that it does not get a shear and it doesn't have a din of nevela at that time. But the other thing that Ravuna said is very disturbing, because that's what we're up to today, right at the bottom. The Omer of Huna, Shnei Chatzai Zeitim, Sheyeshnan Al Gabei Ha'or, Ha'or Mivatlan. So what he seems to be saying over here is that the very fact that something is less than a shear, and it was left attached to the skin, it becomes bottle to the skin. Now, if he says it becomes bottle to the skin, then that means that it's not the fact that you cut them off that is mevatel them. It's the fact that little tiny pieces, even if you wouldn't have been thinking about them, they would become bottle because of the very fact that they are attached to the skin. Now, this raises problems, because once that's true, it should not help you to be kenes them to get a shear, because if you claim that they are really bottle, then that would mean that you can't reconstitute them. You can't make an avela out of nothing. You can make ochlin, yes, by being machshev of that. But here he's telling that it becomes once again shayach to tumat nevelot. I understand that you can make something roy for tumas ochlin, because you can even, we learned yesterday, you can even boil the ore itself and turn the ore into tumas ochlin. But certainly that doesn't mean you can give it a din of busser, which would mean it would be a din of busser nevela. That's not possible. So these two things seem to be contradictory. On the one hand, Ravuna is saying that if you gather it and then you reverse your original mashmaut, that your intention was when you were flaying the skin, you didn't care about throwing out this garbage little pieces of meat, and that that was the problem. And therefore, if you gather them back together, so now you're showing, no, I never meant to throw them out. I actually, as you can see, view them as meat and always viewed them as meat. And therefore, your assumption that they were bottle is not true. But the next statement says that the ore itself was mevatel them, which means it's not a function of my intent when I did the actual skinning, but that the very fact that you have a small, less than a kezias piece of meat attached to skin means that it becomes part of the skin. Now, the truth is, as we mentioned yesterday, that we have a Mishnah later on, which we'll see this week, in which there's a machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva about what the din is of little pieces of meat that are left on a skin where somebody picks up the skin, and now he has two, let's say, half zeitim of nevela that are attached to the skin, and if you would carry two pieces of meat, which together equal a nevela's kizayis, minimum shear, then you would become tame, because the carrying them is the equivalent of touching them together, because nevela is metame b'masa. Now, the problem over here is that in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva argue about whether the or is actually mevatel the meat. Now, Rabbi Akiva says, once you've got less than a kizayin, then the meat has no significance when it's attached to a piece of skin, and it becomes batel and mevatel to the skin, which means that the most you could do was to create a situation with your own commitment to it, and same thing you could do for the skin itself. You bring it back together to eat, so now it becomes right to be mekabel tumat ochlim. But certainly you cannot reconstitute a nevela once the nevela has become batel. Mashen Kein Rabbi Shmuel says later in that Mishnah that if you have one piece of skin that has on it two chatzizeis in two different places, when you pick up that skin and you carry it, you're actually carrying a full kizayit of nevela, and you become tomei. So now the question is, who is Rav Huna talking about over here when he says that if you have two chatzoi zetim, that the skin is bevatalit? Because, I mean, on the surface, he just seems to be repeating what Rabbi Akiva says in that Mishnah, which is ridiculous. I mean, he would never, why in the world would Rav Huna claim to be saying a chiddush when he's just saying over what Rabbi Akiva said in a Mishnah? So the Gemara wants to know, what did Rav Huna mean? Aliba dema. And remember that lurking in the background is the contradiction between those two statements of Rav Huna. On the one hand, he's claiming that you can reconstitute a nevela, which means that it was never batel, and the only problem was that until you indicate to us that you did not mean to be mevatelit, we assume that it's batel, but it's not that the skin was mevatelit. It was that your carelessness in doing the skinning in that fashion was mevatelit, which is a completely different idea, because then you can undo that by showing that you do care about it, but you cannot undo what the skin has already done, according to Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, we're trying to get to the bottom of this, because it doesn't make sense to put these two statements together. So tell me, Aliba Deman, who was Rav Huna speaking about, which shita in the Mishnah that's to come, which is the machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva? I mean, if he said it, Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel, how could it make sense? He says that if you have two chatzoi zeisim, then the skin will actually be mevatelit. But Rabbi Shmuel was the one who says in that Mishnah that, on the contrary, the skin actually makes you touching or carrying the two pieces as if they're one kezias, and dafka, the skin would be mitzarifit in order for you to be mekabel tumas and avelas. Obviously not batel. So he couldn't have meant it Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel, could he? And if he was going according to Rabbi Akiva, well, then he's just repeating what Rabbi Akiva said. Pshita. Ha'amar mevatalar. That's exactly what Rabbi Akiva said in the Mishnah. That if you have chatzoi zeitim on a piece of skin, then they become bottled to the skin. So what did he mean, Rav Huna? Well, we could say that Rav Huna was going Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel, and what he was saying is, you have to reevaluate what Rabbi Shmuel said. When Rabbi Shmuel said that the skin is not going to be mevatel the meat of the nevela, you know what that was talking about? That was talking about where the animal was attacked, it was bitten by a dog. The dog actually had torn off some of the hide of the animal with a little bit of meat attached to the hide. So there he says, okay, it would not be batel, because there's no da'as to be mevatelit, and the simple physical fact of being a piece of meat attached to a piece of hide is not going to be mevatel the meat. But that's only where there was no human involved in what happened. So hani mili shepalata tochaya. So let's say it was bitten by a dog. So then he says, there's nothing about being a piece of meat attached to a skin that means that it's batel. But if the person had skinned it off with a knife and had been careless enough not to care about that piece of meat, so basically he was mevatel that meat, and because of that, it would be batel. And that's the whole point that Rav Huna is making. Don't think that Rabbi Shmuel said under any and all circumstances that the meat is not batel to the skin. In the event that you had actually cut it off, then he would have agreed that yes, definitely it would be batel to the skin. Okay. Now, the question is, that doesn't seem to make sense because of the first thing that Ravuna said. As we pointed out, they seem contradictory. The first thing that Ravuna had said was that Alim and Rabbi Yehuda, Ravuna said, if you gather together the little strips of meat, that then it would be metame. But how could it be metame if it was already bottled to the skin? That doesn't make sense. You can't say abracadabra, I dub the novella, after it already lost its din of novella. As I said, the most you can do is turn it into a foodstuff that would be makabel tumat ochlim, yes. But you can't turn it back into a novella. It is not a novella anymore. It was bottled and lost its shame novella. How can you remake a novella? And now the Gemara is going to ask exactly that question. There's a contradiction here in Ravuna. Because, look, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, let's just make sure we understand the case that Ravuna said, that if you gather it together, it would be metame tumas novella. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he'alal ha-mechunas, if you bring it all together in one place, if you make a full kezayit, then you would be chayev on it, and it would be a novella. And Ravuna said that that's only if you put your mind to it, not that it gathered itself, like a little child got it together, or it just happened that it ended up together in a basket. That's not the point. He had to have gone out and gathered it himself. V'hu shekin so, because that shows that even though I just skinned this animal, I never meant to let the pieces of meat just become bottled. I actually want them, as you can see. Now, that means that Ravuna is talking about a case where it is not batal if the person indicates that he has no intention of being mevatel it, right? So obviously it's not ha'or mevatel, because if ha'or was mevatel, it wouldn't matter what your intention is. So if the person is megala, I, in fact, like this meat, and I, as you can see, have never any intention of letting it go, then we don't say, well, too late, buddy. When a piece of meat is left attached to skin, the skin is mevatalit. Obviously, the skin is not mevatalit. So then how did Ravuna say the skin is mevatalit? A minute ago, we were saying that according to Ravuna, the skin is mevatalit, even Aliba, the Rabbi Shmuel, if a person cut it, I'm so confused. So, I mean, look, this makes sense if you're ready to admit that your previous statement was a mistake, okay? So, if you're going to tell me that what we said before is wrong, and Rabbi Shmuel would certainly not hold that in the event that you cut it with a knife, that then the skin is mevato it. Even that is not bato. Okay, so then Ravuna could be saying, if you take that sheet of Rabbi Shmuel, then you can reverse what happened because, as Rabbi Shmuel pointed out, he doesn't agree with Rabbi Akiva. The skin per se is not mevatalit. It was only the fact that you cut it that way that's mevatalit, and that you can undo by showing clearly that you intend to keep these pieces of meat and you never meant to be mevatal then. So then Ravuna's explanation of Rabbi Yehuda and saying that it needs to be an act of gathering it together would make perfectly good sense. But now that you're telling me that you're claiming that Ela'i Amr, what you just said, that according even to Rabbi Shmuel, if you actually cut it off with a knife when you were flaying the skin, that then it would be bottled to the skin by the skin. So in other words, you have allowed it now to become part of the skin, and now you will not be able to reconstitute the din of nevelis. So then what Ravuna is saying makes no sense at all, not according to Rabbi Shmuel, and not according to Rabbi Akiva. So how could Ravuna assert that what Rabbi Yehuda meant was that if you have little pieces and you bring them together to now be a full kezayit, you would be undoing the original bittul because it's not bottled to the skin. Rabbi Akiva says beferish is bottled to the skin. And you claim that even Rabbi Shmuel is made that it's bottled to the skin in the event that you used a knife to actually flay the skin. So now Rav Huna is not going to anybody, excuse me, Rav Huna Dona Keman. So he's making a statement that is a contradiction to both Tanoim and the Mishnah, and he's just casually saying that that's the case Rav Huna is talking about. Does that make sense? Rav Huna cannot say these two statements. One of them has got to be wrong. If you're telling me that Pachas B'Kazayas, the Or is Mevatalit, then you cannot say at the same time that, according to Rav Yehuda, you can unmevatal it by gathering it together. There's no such thing as being unmevatal it. Okay, so we're going to have to reevaluate this. All right, so let's take the first thing that we said as being correct. He was talking Aliba to Rabbi Shmuel. We were right about that. Let's change what we said. That he didn't mean that according to Rabbi Yishmael, it would be bought. Le'olam palatato sakin. We were wrong. He was not referring to Rabbi Yishmael. He was actually referring to Rabbi Akiva. There's no way that Rabbi Yishmael ever holds that the skin is mevatel. So even if you used your knife on it, the moment that you gather it together, it's not going to be bought. So what did Rav Huna mean when he said, the skin is mevatalet? Oh, that's Rabbi Akiva. But I thought you said that that's obvious. That's what Rabbi Akiva said. Pshita. Rabbi Akiva said that in the Mishnah. So what is Rav Huna adding over here? I know you have to understand. If it wouldn't have been for Rav Huna telling us this, Aliba to Rabbi Akiva, I might have thought, that Kika Amar Rabbi Akiva, when did Rabbi Akiva say that two chatzai zeitim are bottled to the skin? Only in a case where you allowed them to be bottled to the skin. In other words, you were the one who cut the hide off, so you skinned this animal, and in doing so carelessly, allowing these small pieces of meat to remain attached to the skin, that meant that you allowed the skin to be mevatalet. But if it had been attacked by a dog and there was no das that was involved, it's not the physical fact of being a piece of meat that is left against the backside of a hide that is going to make it bottle. It's not automatically bottle. So avapalatato chaya lo bottle. So Rav Huna has to explain to us. You need to understand. The time of the Rabbi Akiva. Mipnesha or mevatlan. The whole point of Rabbi Akiva is based on the fact that the skin is mevatalet by definition, not because of what you did, but because of the actual physical fact that this is a piece of meat attached to the back of a hide, and that is exactly what the chiddush is that Rabbi Akiva holds. Come hell or high water. He's always loshna palat chaya, loshna palat sakin, and this is backed up by the way that the Mishnah later on explains Rabbi Akiva shita kidiktani seifa mipnei ma Rabbi Akiva mitayer. I mean, why was Rabbi Akiva mitayer? Be'or mipnei sha'or mevatlan. That restatement of Rabbi Akiva makes it very clear that we're talking about the physical reality of the skin being mevatalet and not the intent of the person who was flaying the skin from the meat that's mevatalet. That is the point. And therefore, everything makes perfectly good sense. But if you wouldn't have said that, then Rav Huna makes no sense. Because look, you can't say that Rav Yehuda is a different shita. Because if Rav Huna had never said that when Rav Yehuda made the statement that if it is gathered together in one place and is a kezayit, that it's going to be matami tumas nevelos, you can't prove that according to Rav Yehuda that means that the person himself was koneset. Maybe what Rav Yehuda meant is if there is a kezayis in one place, then it would be never bought up. And after all, that has no relevance to the machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael were only talking about a case where there was less than a kezayit. How do I know that Rabbi Yehuda is talking about a case where there was less than a kezayit, even in the beginning? Maybe initially there was a kezayit. So all he's saying is, if you have a kezayit in one place, so then you'd be chayiv. It's Rav Luna who forced us to recognize that we're going to have to deal with the machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmo by insisting that we're talking about less than a kezayit, and therefore we need the guy to go and gather it together, right? So essentially, what happened over here is that first, Rav Luna messed himself up by the moment he said you have to gather it together. So he's telling us, okay, so then there wasn't a kezayis there initially, right? So then we right away think, well, wait a minute. Isn't that a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel about what the status is about the skin? Okay, so we say to ourselves, all right, so apparently he's making this statement, Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel, and the skin is not mevatalit. So it didn't bother us. But then at the end of the daf where we started this morning, all of a sudden Rav Luna says two things that make no sense together. You can't have it both ways. On the one hand, he is saying that the skin is mevatalit, if it's a chatzizayit. And on the other hand, he's saying that then you can go ahead and gather it together and it will be matami tumas avelus. That's insane. It doesn't work out. That's why we had to reevaluate it. We had to say, look, he must have said that part, Aliba de Rabbi Akiva, that the skin is mevatalit. He certainly would never have said Aliba de Rabbi Yishmo that the skin is mevatel. That's the point. And so Memela, there was a chiddush in Rabbi Akiva. Rav Luna, as we said originally, is actually going Aliba de Rabbi Yishmo. And he never meant to say that Rabbi Yishmo would be meida if the sakin had been polated. So now we understand how all of these shitas add up together. What Rav Luna did that we wouldn't have known without Rav Luna, both in terms of understanding Rabbi Yehuda, that it was talking about a case where it was pachas b'kezayit, and we also come to understand that Rav Huna has taught us a very important lesson about Rabbi Akiva, that it wouldn't even matter, according to Rabbi Akiva, if a doggy had bitten it, because it is not a function of the person's intent whatsoever. It's purely and entirely an analysis of the physical reality of a piece of meat that is stuck, a small piece of meat that is stuck to a hide that has been properly flayed a little carelessly, and that is telling us, I don't care what happened, whether it was flayed carelessly or it was bit by an animal, the point is, a piece of skin that doesn't have a kezias of meat on it is going to be mevatel that meat. So in a sense, it's a mirror image of the original idea that we were talking about in which things could be mitzarev over here, where we talked about skin as a shomer. Over here, it's the exact opposite. The skin is the thing that's mevatel the meat and is therefore makes it, even if it's an avela, it will no longer be metame. So this is a mirror image of the opening idea of skin serving as a shomer. In that case, it couldn't be mitzarev because we know it's only nivlata, but at least it would be a conductor of that tumah. So we've come full circle from the original Mishnah's assertion, and because we've come full circle, we bump into the other side of Richie's head because we got to the next Mishnah, and we're ready to hear him say, but he has to say it backwards. The Zukta Hilika Mishnah. Okay. No. I saw on YouTube this morning, you know, every day they've got a new way of making sure that you are either demented or not demented. So today's way of making sure is by saying Zukta Hilika Mishnah backwards. And they claim that anybody that can do that is the equivalent of standing on one leg for 3 minutes straight, and that proves you're not demented, as Doc will be happy to reassure you.
Hey, look, Zok. Zok, the Heidegger Mishnah.
Great job, Rich. You're going strong. Elo she'orotehem kivisarah. Now we run into another question, because we were taking for granted in the original Mishnah that, okay, for sure, skin is not going to be part of an avela, but the question is, it could be a conductor of an avela. That's what we spoke about. But what's interesting is that there are things and there are parts of certain animals in which the covering of the actual muscle fibers is by something that is technically called skin in terms of the medical literature, but in terms of the halacha is not considered to be skin. It's considered to be the equivalent of meat because it's very soft. And therefore, when it's cooked and eaten like the animal itself. So, elu she'orotehem kibisaran. Now, this halacha, if they are kibisaran, then that would mean whatever the issue is with the basar. If the basar is metame benevelas, if the basar is metame tumas meis, I mean, whatever the situation is, that would be the equivalent of that skin. So, first of all, human skin is not considered to be different than human flesh. And because of that, when we talk about kizayit, basar, min hamet, it would include the skin of a human. The same thing is true, as we know, again, medically, that pigs and humans are very alike. And the same thing is true of the or of the actual domesticated pig, the chazir shel yishuv. Those animals actually look very human. And if you wouldn't be seeing the whole pig, and you would see just the pig's tummy, you'd be absolutely certain you're looking at a human. So the or chazir shel yishuv, so a pig skin, if it's a domesticated pig, not a wild boar, that is considered to be soft and therefore has the same din as its basar. So if the dead pig is a nevela, then so is the skin part of the nevela and its metami. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, now why does it have to be a domesticated pig? Even the chazir habar is, it's true, it's not as soft as the domesticated pig, but it still is soft enough to be considered to be basar. So he holds that the definition of soft is a lot harder than we thought, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, there's also the or that is on the chateret of a young camel, which we're going to define exactly what we mean by a young camel later on. But the skin that's on the actual hump is very soft. And if it's still a soft camel, now we're going to have to explain what that means. Soft in this sense means like tender and young. Or harosh shel egel harach. Again, if you have, we'll have to explain what a rach is. But again, whatever a tender, so to speak, calf is, the skin of its head is also going to be the equivalent of its basar. And it is considered to be roi lachila. Or haperasot, and we talked about what we mean by the or haperasot. We're talking about the part that is soft and bleeding, like we said before. And the or beit haboshet, that talk about the vaginal skin of a female animal, is also considered to be very soft. The or of a fetus, the entire fetus, is very soft. The or shel tachat ha'alya, if you're talking about a lamb, then it has this fat tail, and that is actually the skin underneath is very tender, and no hair grows there, and it's just like soft like a piece of meat. The or of an anaka, v'hakoach, v'halita'a, v'hachomet. Now, there's something a little bit strange about this list. And these are the names of the shrotzim that appear in the parsha of Shmone Shrotzim. And basically, listen carefully to the pasuk, and you'll see what our problem is. V'zelachem hatamei basheretz hashoretz al ha'aretz. So listen to the list. Hacholed, ha'achbar, ha'atzav, and now comes the word limineu. That's the end of the first pasuk. The second pasuk continues. V'ha'anaka, v'ha'koach, v'ha'lita'a, v'ha'chomet, v'ha'tinshamet. These appear after the word liminehu in the first pasuk. Now, all of these eight species that we've just listed, three and five, all of these eight species are the only tameim of the shrotzim. Other shrotzim, even if they're dead, are not metame. And one of the unique features of the eight, or at least the last part of the group, the last five, is that their skin is not considered to be a skin the way other animals have skin. And this has a very important implication for Hilchos Shabbos. Because remember, if you cause a bruise on an animal with skin, so then the bruising is a sign of broken capillaries that are beneath the skin, and the blood that you're seeing as the bruise is being held in place by the skin. And therefore, you see the bruising on the upper layer of the skin that's visible to your eyes. But in the shratzim, the skin is not really skin. It's so soft that if there would be any type of bruising, it would go straight to the surface and would bleed. So therefore, there's a special halacha legabi those things if they don't have a skin. So then the shaila would be, would they be able to actually have a bruise? So that's benogia hilchos Shabbos. Here the question is that the softness of that skin also makes a nafkamina legabe the tuma of those things, because if it's considered to be basar, so then it will be able to be metame. Now, for some reason, the only thing that's included in the list over here are four out of the five, of the last five in the second pasuk, which is very strange that we should leave one out, but we'll talk about that. So here it talks about the anaka, the koach, the leta'a, and the chomet, and only those, doesn't mention the tinchamet, which also was part of the second list, but it just very conspicuously leaves it out. And Rabbi Yehuda says, well, now wait a minute. The leta'a actually has the same din as the chulda. So the chulda has a real skin. And, okay, it's generally, we're taking the chulda, is generally taken to mean a weasel, whatever. Well, a weasel obviously has real skin. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that a lizard skin is also considered to be real skin and does not have a din of basar. And as I said, this will have nafkamina legabe dine Shabbos as well. So this is strange because, like, where do we get this from? I mean, if it's based on the pasuk, how do you leave out the tinchamet? And if it's not based on the pasuk, like Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, so what is it based on? Now, in all of these cases, continues the Mishnah, in all of these cases where we've got these soft skins, if you actually turn them into real leather by doing a standard tanning process on them, so you use the chemicals and the salt and so on that would tan them, even if you hadn't tanned them with chemicals, but you did the walking over them. So one of the ways of processing skin is by don't tread on me. And if you do tread on me, then you turn me into actual leather. So then if you did that, in either case, you turned what was previously soft and meaty, legabi the dinam of tuma, you turn them into leather, and at that moment they are no longer mitame at all, except for one thing, and that is if you're a Nazi and you turn human skin into what you think is leather, it is still going to be mitame. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Omer, all eight of those shratzim, they are all the same. They all have real skin. I disagree with both Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanna Kamma. I don't think any of them are considered to be basar. So let's take a look at the strange halacha that human skin is different than other skins, and why would that be true? Amar Ula, the truth is, it is not the din. Midiraisa, there is no difference between human skin. Devar Torah, or Adam, actually, now this version of Ula is talking about the first part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that or Adam is going to be like the basar of the Adam and its metame. That's not really true, says Ula. The or Adam is actually tar. The reason that the Rabbanan said it's tameh is because we're afraid that people will turn the skins of their parents into shtichim, into carpets, or into something that they use to cover over the table. So the Rishonim talk about, like, that's crazy. So why are we focusing on using their parents' skin? And so because we want to talk about how crazy this could be, that somebody, it's not bad enough, somebody would be like a Nazi, but we want to make it even worse, that they would even be over on Oror, Makla, Vivimai, and so on. That's the general approach most of the Rishonim. I suspect that there's a completely different explanation for this, and that the reason that it strikes us as crazy is only because of the fact that the Gezerah was made. Because if you take a look in many societies, in many primitive societies, the parents' bodies are buried inside the house, under the floor, or these crazy Christian groups, they celebrate these dead bodies that they keep in the churches and so on.
Ancestor worship. Yeah. Very common. Ancestor worship.
Thank you, Rabbi Neil. So in all such societies, the actual physical remains, a hair from Mohammed's head, a beard, or whatever nonsense the physical presence gives them, it's Davka Avi V'ima is another way of understanding the Gemara that I'm suggesting. None of the Rishonim say it, but I think it makes a heck of a lot of sense that it's a Gezerah Davka to create a sense of distance from the dead, in order that there not be such a thing as ancestor worship. And we find the same idea, by the way, as the Ramban points out or hints to about Moshe Rabbeinu's kvura, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was careful that no one should know where Moshe Rabbeinu was kavur, in order to avoid this crazy Buddha effect, in which a person who's claiming all along not to be a god suddenly becomes a physical entity that's worshipped. It's insane the way human minds work. So by creating an tuma, you actually create a sense of horror and distance from the mace, and it's because of this takana that the Gemara seems insane. But if it wouldn't have been for this takana, it would have made a lot of sense, you see? So it's just an indication of how useful the takana of the Rabbanan is, that it literally changes human psychology. So now the idea of being korov to a mace, a person is bottled from the mace because he's bottled from tuma. And now the mace becomes associated with tuma and evil spirits and all of the superstitions that are associated with graveyards and so on and so forth. It all comes gufa because of the fact that we want to distance people from this type of connection to working with tuma and worshiping tuma, which is the ways of these magicians and these crazy people who speak to the dead and so on. So that's what I'm suggesting. But anyway, Be'ikar HaDin, what we're saying is an Or Adam would not have the din of the Basar of Adam, would not be Metame, but we made a Gezerah that it should be Metame. But others learned that what Ula was going on was the Seifa. The Seifa said, Ula agrees to the Reisha, that Or Adam Midiraisa is considered to be the equivalent of Basar. The Seifa that says that if you're a Nazi, and you turned this humid skin into leather, that everything would be tar, but not human skin. And there, Ula said, why is that? Because Devar Torah or Adam She'ibdo, if you turned humid skin into leather, then it would be tar. And that would be true midiraisa. Why did the Rabbanan say that even if it's turned into leather, that it's tameh? Gezerah shemayaseh adam orot avivim oshtichim. But the ikar halacha, that the or adam is tameh kebaser, that is a diraisa, according to this. So if you learn Ula going on the Reisha, and that the actual or Adam is midiraisa, it's tahar. So kol shekein, if it's been worked and turned into leather. But mind the matnia seifa, according to this, it's only a derabanan where it's been turned into leather and it's no longer basar Adam. But in the case of the Reisha, then we would agree that the Oradam is Mitame, even Midir Raisa. Okay, the next thing we learned was the Or HaChazir, the machlokes between the Tanakama and Rebbe Yehuda, about whether this applies only to the domesticated pig, or whether it's even true about wild pigs. So what's the machlokes about? About the definition of hard and soft. So obviously the Tanakama, by giving you this distinction between a domesticated pig and a wild pig, is there to tell you, how do I define hard skin and soft skin by that distinction? That's the tipping point. Whereas Rebbe Yehuda disagrees, and he holds it's not true. You have to move that tipping point to where it actually even includes a wild pig. That is also considered to be soft la'halacha, despite the fact that it's harder than the domesticated pig. That's the machlokas. Next thing you said was a gamal haraka. Now, what defines a gamal haraka? A nice tender camel. What's a tender camel? Omer Ula Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, what it means is that as long as you haven't actually put things on the back of that camel and secured them to the hump of the camel, which tends to create, bunions and all types of hardening of the skin, the same way human skin, once it's used in a rough way, it hardens. So that's the meaning. If it hasn't been used to carry anything, it remains tender. It's not a function of years. Well, maybe it is. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyahu. I mean, suppose it's old enough to be generally used for carrying things, but this particular one wasn't used. It's higias mana litons. It's already old enough. So were we talking about literally the hardening of the skin that's due to the usage, or were we talking about the age at which the skin is viewed as mature enough to be hard to carry a burden? I mean, that makes a big difference, doesn't it? Higias mana liton velotano. What would be the din? Or vice versa, says Abaye. What about if it's really young and people generally do not put heavy things on a young camel like that, but this guy did? What's the din? Would the very fact that you were turning on it, would that change the skin and make it ashun or not? Take Yosef Reish Lakish Vekami Baile. What exactly would be the meaning of a soft, tender camel? So Rabbi Shmuel bar Abba said to him, well, I can tell you what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said. Kol zman shelo ta'ano. As long as it hasn't carried anything, it is soft. Said Reish Lakish, thank you so much. I never had known that halacha. Please sit down over here next to me in honor of the way that you enlightened me. Now, this is shocking because Rabbi Shmuel bar Abba actually came from Bovel, and you'd never think that Reish Lakish would be nice to someone from Bovel because he will usually refuse to even shake his hand. But over here, even though he's tough, he was ready to have him sit next to him because he was makir teva that he gave him over the halacha from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Now, there was another similar maisa where Rabbi Zera had the same question. And he was in Eretz Yisrael. He was in Bavel, and he wanted to know the same question. What is the shear of a gamal haraka? So Ravin Bar Chinana said to him, oh, I know from Ula Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kozman Shalotana. This din is as long as it wasn't actually used for carrying. Now, nobody knew this halacha, so Ravin went into the Beis HaMedrash and he went around telling everybody, I know from Ulam, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, I can tell you the definition of what a gamal haraka is. So Rabbi Zera said to him, there's one thing in your whole life that you knew, and now you got to go around telling it over to everybody. It's the only damn thing that you ever figured out in your life. Why don't you just shut up already? You had one thing that you knew. You said it already. You don't need to repeat it and to show off like you're smart. Now take a look at the difference between the toughest characters in Eretz Yisrael and how decent they are, and the big Hasidim of Bava, like Rabbi Zera was known as a big Hasid, and he used to make sure that Gehenim wouldn't be shailen on him, and he would, every month, he would check himself out that he wasn't going to burn again. I mean, this guy was like a super duper frummy. Yeah, but the frummies in Bava compared to the toughies of Eretz Yisrael are a bunch of bums. And this is the difference between Tkifei Arad Yisrael and the Hasidim of Bavel in how they treat another human being. Oh, beautiful story. V'or HaRosh shall we talked about the Or HaKoteret, and then we have the same idea of the Or HaRosh of an Egel HaRach. But what is the share of an Egel HaRach? So Ula says it's within. Ben Shnato means within its first year. Remember, in Halach, we define a Ben Shnato as within that first year. Rabbi Yochanan Omer calls Man Sheyonek as long as it is actually still suckling milk. So, wait a minute. Did Ula mean to say Ben Shnato, which is suckling? And Rabbi Yochanan said, no, even if it's more than that first year, or maybe it's the other way around. Ula was saying, suckling has nothing to do with it. It's within its first year. And Rabbi Yochanan was coming to say, only if it's still suckling. So, I mean, that would be a complete inverse, that Rabbi Yochanan would actually be saying that the shear would only apply for hushionek. Well, analyze the language. Toshma. Rabbi Yochanan says, as long as it's suckling. Now, if what Rabbi Yochanan meant was only if the first year, and he's turning to what it was that had originally been said, Ula, first year, no, he should have said what? Well, not necessarily, only if it's suckling. But instead, what does he say? As long as it's suckling. So obviously, in Ita, if he meant you need both, then he would have said, only Vahushi Yonek. But since he says Kozman Shionek, he's obviously expanding the envelope and going beyond what Ula said. And he's saying, even if it's more than 1 year old, it would still be considered to be Rach. By me, Reish Lakish, Rav Yochanan. Now, Reish Lakish obviously knew the Mishnah, as we'll see. And what he wanted to know is what Rav Yochanan ended up saying to him in response. He wanted to know whether the Mishnah, our Mishnah, is it a Das Yochid or is it the normative halacha that everybody's mitzvah to? So in order to get that information, he asked Rabbi Yochanan lahalacha, what's the din of the Or HaRosh Shal Egel HaRach? Maoshi Yatame, can it be metame as an Avela? And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it's not. Said Reish Lakish to him, so obviously Reish Lakish knew our Mishnah. He asked him from our Mishnah, but Rebbe, you taught us in this Mishnah, Or HaRosh Shal Egel HaRach is included in the rule of Elu She'orotam Kivisaram. And now you're changing your mind? And now you're telling me that it's not going to be Metame? So Rabbi Yochanan says, and the reason that he takes this for granted is because, after all, according to Rabbi Yochanan, a Stam Mishnah is always halacha, and this is a Stam Mishnah. Amar lei. So Rabbi Yochanan had to fess up to Reish Lakish. All right, stop making me crazy. Al takniteni, always get after me. The truth is, I don't have this as a Stam Mishnah. I have this as a specific Das Yochid. Beloshen Yochid Anishoneota, and I'll show you the marker for that, because basically, the Braita says Beferish. This is a Braita that has to do with Pigel. Okay, so in order to be Mefagel, remember, what's the rule of Pigel? Somebody who had in mind to either be makriv or to eat, depending on you're talking about a nailo, you're talking about a shlamim, a dover shedarko lechol, or something which is darko lahakriv, chutz lizmanoi, is chayev kores, chutz lemekemei, it's considered to be paso, but you're not chayev kores, whatever, you remember the halach as a pigol. Now, the Braita, in addressing what parts are considered to be dover shedarko leechol or darko lahaktir, so it says in the Braita, if you shecht a korban oila and you had in mind that you're going to be makter a kizayit of the or shetachat ha'aliyah, Chutz l'mikomo, it's pasul v'en bo karet. Chutz l'zmano, it's pigo, and you're chayavim olav karet. But that's the only part, the skin under the alya. Now, I mean, there was a whole Mishnah about the aura of the Egel HaRach and the aura of the Choteret of the Kamal HaRach. I mean, like, how come the only case that we consider to be Roy L'Achila and therefore to be Chayav, be able to turn the animal into Pigo, would be Dafka the Or Tachat HaAlya? There's a whole list of things. And indeed, Elazar ben Yehuda Ish Avlon quotes Rabbi Yaakov, and Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Ishkvar Ikum quotes Rabbi Shimon. Nah, what are you limiting it to the Or HaAlya, Or HaPrasot, or the Or HaRosh of the Egel HaRach, or the Or Shel Tachat HaAlya, and anything that appears in the Mishnah and Chulin? Kol Shemanu Chachomim Gabituma in the Perek HaOr VaRotev Sheorotem Kivisaram. Well, I mean, if those things are Metame Bin Avela, why would they not be able to create Pigol if they're considered to be Roy L'Achila, Roy L'Aktara? So we disagree. And I'm saying, okay, you're talking about a Korban Ola. It's very difficult to find a vagina in an Ola for the simple reason that Olas are male. But the truth is, anything, kol shemonu chachomim, which includes things not applicable here, but if you're talking about a shlomim, that would include even the or shabesh abet aboshet of a shlomim, there, all of these things, chutz l'mekomo, would be possible. But of course, in Bokaris, because Karis is only chutz l'zmano, and chutz l'zmano would be pigo v'chayov and olav Karis. So what do you see from here, says Rabbi Yochanan? You see from here that it's only these two shitas that were said in the name of either Rabbi Yaakov or Rabbi Shimon that the Mishnah here in Chulin actually is relevant, la halacha, to the din of Pigel. The Tanakhama did not agree. The Tanakhama said there's only one thing, and that was the Or Shetachas HaAlya. So then that means when you asked me about the Or of an Egel HaRach, I answered you not in accordance with this Mishnah, because I know that this Mishnah is not a Stam Mishnah. It's Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon, as we discovered in the Braita about the Dinim of Pigo. So in fact, la halacha, it's only the Or Shetachas HaAlya, and all of these other things are not considered to be meat. Okay. Then we moved on, and we spoke about the Or Beit HaPirasot. Now, the Beit HaPirasot can be two different things. I mean, Rav says it means exactly, literally, Beit HaPirasot. So, I mean, the hoof itself obviously is not considered to be meat. But if you have the thin piece of skin that covers over the top of the hoof itself, that thin piece of skin is very sensitive, very soft. It's basically like the skin of your fingernail, which hurts like hell if you get it, if you cut it or anything. And because of that, it's considered to be buzzer. That's what it's referring to as the equivalent of the Beit HaPirasot. Rabbi Hanina said, no, it means the entire joint. Remember when we were talking about the Arkuva Nimkeret Im HaRosh, that generally if somebody buys the head of the animal, they would throw in the butcher shop, they would throw in the actual Beit HaPirasot, which, as I pointed out there, people think it's a leg. It's not a leg. It's basically a foot bone in which what you're looking at is the evolutionary development of the same bones that you have in a human foot. But here it's like so elongated that what you're looking at the top is basically the heel of that foot. And it looks like the top of a leg. And that's the arkuva. It isn't a real arkuva. It's actually an ankle, but it's the arkuva nimkeret im harosh. So the entire skin there, as I'm sure you've noticed, is very, very thin. There's almost nothing on that except bone and that thin layer of skin. And that entire piece is considered to be soft, and therefore that skin would also be considered, according to our Mishnah, it would be considered to be soft and meaty. Now, the Mishnah said that the Or of the Anaka, the Koach, the Lita'a, and the Chomet, and for some reason left out the Tinshamet, and for some reason left out all three members of the first Pasuk. So we jumped ahead and we analyzed the pasuk and we saw that the word leminehu occurs at the end of the first pasuk, which sort of brings an end to that set. And then starts the next pasuk. It does the same thing about Eliminehu, and that mentions an additional five. So, Tana Rabbanan, remember this is our pasuk we've had so many times. Elu hatmi lachem. And we said that extra hey of hatmeim comes to expand the meaning of what's tamei. And we used it, remember, to talk about the tzir and so on. It also includes l'rabot oroteihem kivisaran. So when it's talking about the shratzim, elo hatmeim lachem, it's talking about the shmona shratzim. At least, that's what it seems to be saying, because it follows the two psukim that list eight shratzim. Yochel afilo kulam. You might think that that includes all eight shratzim. No, it says Eile specifically. Yeah, but the Eile is going back on the whole list. What do you mean it says Eile? For Eile Kuluktivi. This Eile comes after the two psukim. Why aren't all of them included? Ah, because Liminehu, at the end of the first pasuk, it says Zelachem Hatamei Basheretz Hasheretz Alaoretz. And then it lists the Choled, the Achbar, and the Tzav, but it ends with Leminehu. That closes off that set. Now we've got the next Pasuk, and the next Pasuk that lists the other five, the Anakah, and the Koach, and the Leta'ah, and the Chomet, and the Tinshamet. Eile refers to those, the last ones. But the word Minehu, Hivsika Inyan, it breaks it into two sets. Okay. But if that's the case, and it's all built around an analysis of the pasuk, then why don't we mention the tinshamet? The tinshamet itself is listed in that pasuk of the last five, and you managed to sneakily leave it out when you listed the hanakah and the koach and the leta'ah. Why did you not list the entire pasuk? Lichshav nami tinshamet. Omer Shmuel bar Yitzchak, well, Rav, who is the mocker of this limud, actually, in his Mishnah, and Rav has a right to argue, he has a din of a Tana if he so insists, and he recognizes his own level of understanding of this to be the equivalent of the Tannaim. He actually, in his Mishnah, he actually lists Tinshamet. And because of that, it's consistent with the way that he explained it. The Minehu is the basis of the separating out the three from the eight, and you're left with five, which means that according to him, the entire thing has to do with the structure of the pasuk. And because of that, he does list in an equivalent Mishnah that he reads, he listed the Tinshamet together with the Anakah, the Leta'ah, and the Koach, and so on. So, but how do you explain our Tana? I mean, there's got to be some logic to this, no? V'atana didan lo tani Tinshamet. So how does he explain the basis of the distinction between those shrutzim that do have a or and those shrutzim that do not? Homer of Sheshes Bereda Ravidi, our Tana, holds like Reb Yehuda. And Reb Yehuda, he goes according to Gishta. So therefore, our Tanakama, whoever it is not going according to the pasuk. He is going according to Rabbi Yehuda, who said in the Mishnah that the Lita'ah is like the Chulda. So, I mean, like, what is he saying? Lita'ah is like a Chulda. Based on what? Based on his observations. So, in other words, that means that Rabbi Yehuda simply looks physically, and what he's saying is, if the skin is thick, then the Lita'ah's thin is thick. And why would it be any different than the Chulda? So he basically uses his own svara as to what is considered to be a thick like a skin. So according to him, it's the thickness of it. It's the way that it's textured. That's the meaning of Gishta. And the Gishta of the Leta'ah is similar to the thick texture of the skin of the Chulda. And because of that, he said it. So therefore, if he holds that the Tin Shamet is actually not soft, it's not going to list the Tin Shamet. It's not going to do with the Eila. It has to do with the simple physical observation of whether it would have a din of skin or meat. Now, we said in the Mishnah, if you tanned them or you walked on them long enough for them to be considered leather, but you didn't explain how long is walking on them. What does that mean? Then it would be tahar. So, Zdavka, if you walked on it, then it's tahar. What about if you just put it down on the ground? You hired the guys to walk on it, but they haven't done any walking yet. So, was your machshava able to turn it into a din of leather? Because the dinim of tuma are generally defined by machshava. Is the putting it down on the ground to walk on? What would be the din? Because here the Mishnah implies only if you actually worked on it. Lo, but the thing is that a braita that Rabbi Chiya had learned, which is one of the reliable braitas, says if you take the ear of a donkey, a nevela, you take that ear and to la'ala kupato, you put it on a torn basket in order to fix the basket. So now you've got a donkey-eared basket. That takes off the din of nevelas because you turned it into leather. So you see, you don't need to do anything to it. It's the fact that you treated it like leather. So why don't we say that just putting it on the ground, preparing it for people to tread on it? Well, I mean, that's not a kasha. Tila'an is different. If you actually did something to it, to make it used as leather. That, of course, is mavato the shem baser from it. So there you wouldn't need to actually walk on it. So tila'a afa gavdolo hileth. And that was the marker of the whole flag. Don't tread on me. It was because they were already marching with the ears of the chamor, which means you don't. There's no need anymore of hileth. So that was all to teach that halacha. But lo tila'a, if, however, you didn't do anything to it and you just prepared it, then hilach in, lo hilach lo. Okay, but you didn't give a very clear time. You said, kidei ibud. What's that amount? Omrevuna omrebyanai, you walk on it for the same amount of time that you would walk for meal. And that would be enough time to do the beginning of the tanning. Rabbi Abba, Mishum de Resh Lakish Omar, that there's this shear of four meal actually is applicable in many different ways. So, Resh Lakish pointed out that in terms of a gabal, let's say you are going to pay a worker to be doing the kneading for you to make your challahs for Shabbos, and this was run by a company called Kenwood Workers. So if you hire them, or benogea tefila, what's benogea tefila? This is a big machlokas, what's benogea tefila? Some learn how far you need to walk in order to get to a minyan. So you'd like to retire for the day, and there's a nice motel, but there's no minyan locally. How far would you have to keep walking in order to get to a minyan? That's how some learn. Others learn that tefillah means in terms of being able to wash your hands for tefillah, where there would be a mokum to wash your hands that's available. It's not talking about a minyan at all. It's talking about a din of netilas yadayim for tefillah or netilas yadayim for eating. So how far would you have to walk before you would be mechuyev to walk to get the water, and you wouldn't be allowed to be semech on, let's say, wrapping your hand. Four meal. And that four meal, says Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak, is, first I want to correct you. You said it was Reish Lakish, that was quoted by Rabbi Avohu. So before I discuss the halacha, I want to make very clear, you got the names mixed up. It was not Rabbi Avohu. It was Ivo who said it, and he did not say there's three things. He said there's four things. And that's how it's sugya or sugya. The fourth thing was the shear of walking in our Mishnah, which you left out, and that was the whole point of our bringing it here. And this halacha Also, you're forgetting a very important halacha, which is that Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Hanina, this din of needing to walk for four mil is only if it's in the direction that you're traveling. So let's say you find a motel, and further down the road, there's a minyan. So if you're going anyway further that down that road, but not if you have to turn around, it's not telling you you got to turn around for four mil to get back to the minyan. No, that's crazy. So Loshano Ela Lefanav, if you're traveling that way anyway, and it's just inconvenient to travel now, then you're mechuyev to travel that way to be able to find water to wash or to find the minyan or whatever halacha we were talking about. But l'acharav, to go backwards, afilu mil echad eino chozer. We wouldn't be mechuyev you even to walk back 1 kilometer. Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, yes, but be medayik in that. We won't be mechuyev you to walk 1 kilometer, but you'd have to walk 0.5 kilometer for a camel. And therefore, you would actually need to walk. If it's less than a mil, nobody's old enough to even remember. I'd walk 1 mile for a camel around here. I'm telling you, it's ridiculous.
I was going to say it before.
We're in the middle of the sugya of the camels and the young camels, and nobody even knows I'd walk 1 mile for a camel anymore. It's a shanda. Anyway, milu de eno chozer. So it's just 1 kilometer, but anything less than that, a pachot mi mil chozer. And that would mean that you would actually be mechuyev. This halacha that we finished, but we're just going to get back to it because of the Nazis. The Nazis were not the first Jew haters that turned skin into leather. And of course, I mean, then it's all denied, never happened, blah, blah, blah. And the same thing is true about the Romans and the Christian church. So, Don Rabbanan, Legiona Vermi Makom Lamakom, you have a Roman legion. And it's going to war. And they go into a house. You have to assume that everything in that house is Tomei Tumas Meis because of Tumas Oya. Why? She'en lo kol legion, the legion she'en lo kamar kar keplin. Well, you think that only the rednecks in the early Americas were the ones who scalped? These Romans used to scalp all the time, which means they were walking around with dead humans. And Altitma, don't think that that's so crazy. Let me tell you something. You think the Vatican's any different? Hare karkaflo sh'Rabbi Yishmo munach barosh melachim, and it's still munach baromi in the Vatican. So that means that they are very, a scalp is to them, oh my gosh, this shows that I have overpowered my enemies. So to take Rabbi Yishmo, to put him on the head of their kings and the Caesar, that's a sign of great power and influence. Okay, so don't think that we're crazy to tell you that these Romans are very barbaric. All right, that is an exciting daf for the day. And we've learned a lot of tremendous chidushim, the dinim of the Shmoneh Shratzim, the Eiros of the Shmoneh Shratzim, the Mokar of the Eiros, whether it's a din in Gishta or whether it's actually an analysis of the Pasuk itself that has split things into. And we've talked about the din of these Orot in terms of Pigol and whether they would also be Negea being Mefagala Karban. And we spoke about the Shiurim of what is considered to be something that is rach, and we also talked about the idea of the very complicated question of when is basar batel to or, or batel because of the act of cutting it, of flaying it, and what cases would it be possible to reconstitute a din of nevela if it was only lost because of the assumption that you were mevatel it, as opposed to if the or actually has the keir to be mevatel as Rabbi Akiva sheet. And in there we discuss Ravuna, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yehuda. Wonderful. Put that all into your pipe and smoke it until Bezrat Hashem we meet, if the good Lord spares us, once again tomorrow. Bezrat Hashem. Kol Tov.